CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Someone says in the comments, it's Pool Me Thursday.
Pumi Thursday.
Pooza Thursday. Did you see the thing a couple of days ago with a poster from one of like the hangout spots that says Enfas ingenile?
No,
it's that time of the month, y'all. I'm gonna find it for you.
Well, people, I mean everybody. Who doesn't love the end of the month? Although you must never make the mistake that I made. What was it? End of October or November last year, where I went to the shops at the end of the month. I've got no excuse, right? Because I can go to the shops anytime I want in terms of, I don't have to go on the Saturday. I've, got time during the week and so on. But if you go to the shops on the last weekend of the month, it is chaos. It is ugly. No.
Don't do it.
Pumi's just shaking.
I just actually hate going to the shops.
Yeah. I do too, And I think I've spoken about this on the show. Mostly on a Monday, I sit and complain about the kind of people I've seen in the shops. But it's because it's not the people. It's because I actually don't like shopping.
Yeah, no, shopping is not that great. But also, Ryan didn't open the blind, so now I can't see outside. Please, Ryan. Ryan is amazing here in the morning, guys. He even brings me coffee. See?
Making sure you got everything.
He is why he's standing here bringing me coffee. but I love that, like, all these shopping apps that, like, deliver in 60 minutes or whatever it is. The only thing about that is you don't get all of the excitement of seeing new things that you've never seen before that you can try out. And also, when they have those little stations of people that have little food things that you can try out in the shop. You know what I'm talking about? Like sampling. Woolworths, baby, you have to. Because, like, you never know. I don't know what kind of juju they put in the stuff that they put on those shelves that you eat, but like every new product that they like put out there, if you try it, you're gonna love it. serious juju on that thing.
Well, I think that the best thing is this delivery stuff. I mean, the new lights in the studio are from Take A Lot. I go on there, and I was talking about it with Lebang the other day, and she's like, because I said to her, I did like a late night midnight shop about 2 weeks ago. I woke up in the middle of the night and I couldn't get back to sleep. So I used some retail therapy. Ended up buying a whole bunch of stuff for the studio and some other shit that I probably don't need. And you make terrible decisions. Everybody knows this. Let me tell you
what you don't need in your life.
What?
The one day only app.
Oh yeah.
That you really don't need in your life. And it's all well and good when it starts out. You're just like, there's all these specials, and you like look at it, and then you get addicted because every day at midnight they wipe it clean and they set up a whole new set of like, so you have to check it every day, and every day you see something that's like, that would be nice.
Well,
don't do it.
Who is it? It's Mash who told me about this app that he uses, where he gets all these special deals on restaurants and on massages and all that kind of thing. And he uses it all the time. He swears by it, in fact. Says it's the best thing ever. But I don't know. Sounds like it could be a bit dodgy. Plus, it's another thing to spend. You know, any temptation that I find in my life to spend money, I try to get rid of unless it's essential. Like I was talking to someone yesterday, they get bread and milk delivered every like 2 or 3 days to their house. Now, I think that would be amazing, but I know I won't go through. I don't know about you, Pumi, but it takes me 2 weeks to get through one of those long life milks because I don't drink a lot of milk. I don't use a lot of milk, and I don't have a hungry teenager in the house like you do.
Now that and my hungry teenager only comes home on weekends, like there's my stuff lasts a lot longer in my house.
Yeah, I should hope so.
Except when it's holidays, no, but
I'm also trying to cut out bread because I love bread, but it's just you know those carbs are just.
Don't cut out bread. It's the only food we pray for by name. How can
that's
it be
right?
Wrong?
But
how
Pums,
can it be wrong?
Did you notice how quickly I immediately went? Oh, okay. Well, I won't then. As soon as you suggested
even if
that,
I was like, even if I said it's prayer.
I know. I agreed immediately. I was like, oh well, anything to keep on. But tell me, there isn't anything better than like ciabatta bread as it comes out of the oven. Oh my God.
With butter, yo. Listen, do not cut out bread. You can cut it down. You can, but bread is life, Baba. Bread is life. Even when the Israelites were starving in the desert, God sent them manna.
That's right. But manna they've discovered wasn't actually bread. It was stuff.
Some kind of bread.
Yes. No, but it's stuff that certain insects, because I remember studying this stuff once. It fascinated me that God had sent manna to the Israelites in the desert. And I became just obsessed with that story. And I remember reading about these certain animals that like they make a sort of carbohydrate that they deposit on trees and that this is the stuff. By the way, while Pumi's resetting her internet because she's in the studio in Johannesburg, I also don't. So just to clear up here, Tracy says long life milk. No, man, really. No. It's not the stuff that you buy that you could leave on the shelf and it's made of God knows what plastic or whatever. No, this is just it's normal. I think it's clover, which is probably my favorite kind of milk if I'm going to be particular about things. I mean, everybody, you know, also as you get older, you have your favorite kind of everything, even the stuff that you probably don't need to have a favorite of. So it comes in those Tetra packs, but it usually lasts 2 weeks instead of just the 1 week. Now, I don't know if that's a bad thing or if that's a good thing. I'm still trying to figure out whether it's, you know, sensible or whether it's not. But to me, that's the one that tastes the best and it lasts the longest. And I don't go through stuff. My worst, I'm sure there are lots of people who are listening to the show now feel the same way. My worst is going to the shops, buying a bunch of stuff, especially perishable stuff. So vegetables, fruit, milk, cheese. And then after a week, you realize like all the stuff you bought is expired and shitty. And I'm not schnorrer. I'm not sitting around counting the pennies and, you know, but when I have to throw away a whole lot of stuff because I bought it and it's now off, it's fraught, it's not working anymore, it's expired. It just makes me sad. I think, what did I waste all that money on? And it's probably just because you could see it. Like, I know I've wasted money on dumber things than that, but you could see it. Hey, Pums.
Yep. I feel
sorry,
that way.
Lost you.
Yeah, kuningi la studio guys, kuningi lokho kwenzakalayo, so just bear with us a little bit. But yeah, I feel that way too. I feel that way too about the nice thing about the ordering apps though, is besides the fact that you don't have to drive anywhere, is that the stuff comes and you put it directly into the fridge. And like when you go and you shop and now you've got all of the cold things and the frozen things and they're in the boot of your car. And
in the boot, and you have things to do in between. Yeah.
And it's like, it's also about, because that's the other thing that makes the stuff go off, right? It's about that cold chain handling. It's about how you handle it between the fridge in the store and the fridge at your house. That also plays a factor. A lot of
by the way, much better, much better, much better connection that we have with you now, Pumi. The studio connection was not so good. Now we've just sorted that out. So this is an interesting one from Eminem. It says, trying to shop at Checkers with all the collections for Checkers 6060 app is similar to driving in traffic with the taxis. It's chaos. Well, that must show up.
Yeah.
That must prove that these things are becoming way more popular and people are using them way more. I mean, you see them on the road, right?
Mm.
They're all over. I mean, these bikes with the 6060 orders are everywhere.
And the dash and the whatnot, and they drive badly. I think they don't have licenses. I think people are just like in need of the job. They're like, you're going to learn how to drive on the road. It's always also all the delivery, like the Uber Eats or whatever. I often drive home from the office at night. I usually leave the office kind of like after 6 or after 7. And then that's when all the Uber Eats guys are. They are not well, like they're not well lit. Some of those bikes are very suspicious, and the drivers, oof.
Look, this is a thing that I hear a lot of people talking about, but would I give up Uber Eats and all these other delivery things for them to be safer or to have less accidents? Probably not.
No, I have to tell you the story. I was driving home the one day, and there was a little bit of traffic building up at a traffic light, and I could hear coming at the back, like the screeching of trying to put the brakes on. And then I just heard the falling apart of something. And when I looked up, but this guy's entire bike, it was like watching those cartoons, you know, when like Bugs Bunny, the bike is on, dismantles itself. That's what happened to this guy. Like as he was braking, this whole thing just fell apart as he was braking so hard, not trying to get into the bumper of the guy. Everything fell apart. It was so hectic. I was so sad for him.
Yeah. And you know, I was also
sad for the person whose food was all over the floor.
Yeah, I feel for them because it's sometimes been one of us, right? But yeah, I do. I don't think that they make a lot of money. The margins are very thin on
these
things. They can't
possibly.
Some people don't tip well. I always feel the need to tip. I've got a standard like 15% tip set on mine. So, and I use them a lot because why the hell should I cook and would I cook when I don't have to? Am I right? Because also I'm not romantic about food. I don't like spending a lot of time in the kitchen worrying about that stuff. So I'll use them 15% and that's good.
I think I told you about the book that I read last year sometime called Influence Empire. Yep. That's all about social media. So the rise of social media in China and how it's impacted all of these things. Because, of course, Uber Eats, Checkers 60, Shane, all of those things are some form of that. That's actually what they are. They work in the back of that ecosystem of social networking and they're also the retailing behind it and the algorithms and all of that kind of stuff. It's all around and incredibly fascinating book. It's called Influence Empire by a guy named Lulu Chen.
Yeah.
But when you read that book, you have a different appreciation for what all of that, the business behind all of these models. And also you get to recognize, I mean, we are a very small population in terms of the market share that we are, because there's not a lot of us. I mean, even though you see a lot of people on the bikes, in the shops, doing the Dash or the 60-60 shopping, the number of people that actually operate in that part of the commerce,
it's tiny.
It's very small.
I mean, you know, if you have disposable income in South Africa, and by disposable income, I mean, like you have more money after your debit orders have come out, you actually have some cash, or you have access to debt, you're in a tiny percentage of the population. Most people are living hand to mouth. So it's tiny. It's probably, 5 to 8 million people out of the 60-odd million? It's that small.
Even less. I mean, I see Uber Eats at home when I go to my parents. So I see Uber Eats in Soweto. I see Mr. D in Soweto. But still, it's still the number of people that operate in that commercial space are actually very few. And it's unlike places like, I mean, when we first heard about Wuhan, we had never heard about that city. And then we find out that there are 8 million people in that city.
Absolutely. That's the whole active economic population of South Africa there, just in that one city. It's incredible.
But even like Mash's discount voucher app or one day only app, the things that make that those discounts work, or that are just, there's such an amazing algorithm behind it and such an amazing technical aspect to making all of those things work. And this book is amazing.
You just think of how brilliant those payment gateways are, and the fact that you press order, goes through immediately, the tip goes through, the delivery is processed, it goes onto the machines. I mean, there are so many things at work here. Do you remember how it used to be before these apps came along?
Yeah, you'd have to Mr. Delivery.
And you'd have to phone them, and then they would always get your order wrong. And so most people would go, you know what, it's not worth it. I'll just rather go and buy the stuff myself or order at the counter, because this is not, it's not working. Half the reason I trust these things now is because you can look at the menu, you can click it yourself, you can have them change something if you want to, and then you know what you're in for, right?
Really?
Yeah. I mean, just explaining, okay, who are you delivering to? Cliff, C-L-I, what? You know, and you used to have these discussions that just went on and on and on with people who weren't able to hear you properly because they're in a noisy kitchen or whatever. Then you had to explain where to go. I mean, it was just, it would never have worked. You'd have to collect most of the time yourself. Do you remember those days? You'd order the takeaway and you'd go and collect them.
We are in the future, guys. This is us. We're heading towards that. Even though we still don't have proper hoverboards, and as you know, I'm salty about that, even though Back to the Future promised us hoverboards years ago.
I am still waiting for mine. I mean, Pumi, I dream at night of hoverboards because of that goddamn movie with Michael J. Fox. You know, he was sliding around through that town of theirs. I thought, what a cool world we're heading towards. TikTok, everybody. I'm still waiting.
Here we are. Well, years past the deadline. We still don't have hoverboards, but okay. We're moving right along, but we are now in that future. We're close enough. We don't have flying cars yet. Don't have hoverboards. I don't know if we'll ever have the flying cars, but at least we've got ChatGPT.
A rebellious Ruth says, a Woolies bike lightly hit the back of me a couple of months ago. I didn't even bother getting the car, put the out of the car. Okay, it wasn't worth the trouble. It was one of those autocorrects.
But what is lightly hit? What is lightly hit? Because it's like,
I think bumper. I mean, that's typical bumper bashing, right?
It's when they take out your mirror, because that's where the danger is. Is those side mirrors, because
Matthew says a 10% tip is good. I know some people who give 0% tip. And to me, it's a tip, I understand. But that person who's riding that bike is probably dependent on that. They're not getting anything from the restaurant. So to me, 15% of whatever the bill is seems reasonable, because it means I'm saving myself that money and time by not going to the shops myself. So I have no problem paying a decent tip there. Restaurant, different story. If you get bad service, you can decide, right? And we've discussed this before. You can go up, you can go down. Depends on how the service goes. And you don't have to feel obliged to give someone a tip if they're really shitty at their job. But if they're actually driving to you and they're spending their petrol money and they are taking the risks that these drivers do, I think it's worth the 15.
It is worth that tip.
Matthew wants to know, Pumi, here's something that keeps coming up. What is the deal with Soweto only having 2 hours of load shedding during stages 4 and 5, while we in Linwood have 8 to 10 hours off? Is that fake news?
Fake news.
Because I've seen people screenshot the Eskom's push app where you can see Soweto is only getting 2 hours. Is that true?
Fake news. I was at my parents' house on Saturday.
Yeah.
And we had 6 hours of load shedding. The weekend before that, the 2 weekends before that, when we were gone to KZN, they had no power at my parents' house. So my sister stayed behind. There was no power from Thursday to Sunday.
Jesus.
From Thursday to Sunday. Fake news. Inga, who we work with at our office, his laptop, young intern filmmaker, he's going to be huge. He's going to be a huge director. Trust me. Okay. His laptop's power cable, doesn't work very well. So he always has to stay plugged in. Mm-hmm. He has up to 8-10 hours of no power a day. So he has to come into the office every day. And he lives in Soweto.
Yeah.
Fake news.
Okay. Well, then we've at least sorted that out, because there's all these rumors floating around. You know what people are like? They want to know. They've got to know the truth. As Nixon said, people have got to know.
You know, people also, we also have to manufacture outrage about the unfairness of some people having and most of us not. It's
right. Fake news.
There's nobody who's first of all, those screenshots can be photoshopped.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
Yeah. I just wonder what kind of person goes to the trouble of photoshopping. So I believe someone would, but I just ask myself, like, what kind of sad, miserable person is going to spend their time photoshopping something in order to create outrage? It's like, it's such a dumb thing to do. When you could be doing something productive, this is what you're doing? Drives me crazy. God.
But riling up the people, it's provocative.
It's some people's favorite thing. And you could even see, like, the way people, no matter what's going on in the news. I mean, you want to talk about this DJ Zintler thing, right? And we got to get into that too, because I think there are a lot of questions around this that many people are thinking at the moment. I was watching the story in America of, you know, John Fetterman is this guy who's got the brain damage from the stroke.
Yes, the one in hospital.
Right, but he's also in Senate, which is just weird. So John Fetterman had this stroke, and he's definitely not coping. Like, he needs a machine that gives him captions so that when people are talking to him or he's talking, he can read the machine with the captions so he can kind of catch up. But he's struggling. I mean, it's really difficult. His brain damage is quite bad. And he's now a U.S. senator because he got elected in Philadelphia. Anyway, his wife, instead of being a good wife and saying to him, you know what, John, you're not great and you can't make these kinds of decisions, I'm going to make the decision to pull out of this race and we'll look after you because your health is number one. That's what any good wife would do, you would think. But she was so hungry and ambitious to be a senator's wife herself that she pushed through. And I think the Democratic Party also were behind this. They were like, no, we've got to push through for this. Instead of him dropping out, they could have gone with another candidate. Who knows? Anyway, so she is there holding his hand. She's saying, no, there's nothing wrong with him. They campaign. He wins. They go to the Senate. Now he's checked himself into hospital because he's not coping. The stress is very high. He's clearly not dealing with all the long-term effects of the stroke. And what does his wife do? She packs the car up and takes the kids and goes off to, like, Niagara Falls and spends a week or more away while her husband's in hospital. This is not a good person. Now, you can argue, oh, well, she needed a break. She's also under huge stress, blah, blah, blah. But I'm sorry, if that's the case, you don't make your husband run for Senate. And when he has run and he's won, and then he checks himself into hospital, you don't abscond with the children. And she's putting all these statements on social media. She's now saying on social media, oh, you know, we just want to be left alone for a little bit. The kids are in the glare of the publicity. I'm like, but if you hadn't run for Senate, your kids wouldn't be in the glare of publicity. You'd have your husband at home. You'd be able to spend time together. You'd be able to look after him, help him recover from his stroke. And he could have run the next time, maybe. But no, you needed this. She's got to be one of the most selfish people I've read about in politics recently. And then the Democratic Party say, well, if anything happens to Fetterman, they'll just run her as the senator. So clearly there's a plan here, and it's got nothing to do with this guy's health.
No.
It upsets me. It's like, what happened to people just being honest and decent with each other? It really, really upsets me that people are behaving like this.
That ship has sailed many, many years ago. And that's why when we see people being honest, people having raw emotion, people, it's so shocking.
Yeah.
Because we don't see it as much as we used to. That's just the, I don't know, the problem with the world today is people, generally, all of us.
Well, why don't you tell us about the DJ Zinsler things? Because she's obviously in mourning. The AKA situation was just a couple of days ago. I mean, it feels like, you know, because our news cycle's 3 days, five days maybe. It feels like just, you know, yesterday. Well, to me, it feels like a long time already, but it's just 2 weeks.
It is just 2 weeks. And, you know, and just watching her go through, because this is the other thing, is everything is on all the time. So whether it's on social media, whether it's cameras in your face, whether it's other people's cameras in your face and phones. Everything is on all the time. But watching her and her daughter. So for those of you who don't know, DJ Zinsler has a daughter with AKA.
Kyra.
And I don't know. I think she's maybe 6 or 7 years old. I'm not sure. I've never been in that part of the story that much. And obviously the little girl has lost her father. So it's quite a thing. DJ Zinsler is now married to somebody else. And they I think they had quite a like public relationship and whatever happened, but they seemed to, watching all of the stuff now, they seem to have had a really good co-parenting relationship. And she was in mourning. She was in shock. She was in mourning. She was also helping her daughter through a very traumatic experience, a little like 6-7 year old girl through a very traumatic experience out in the public eye. And she was posting on her Instagram stories and all of that kind of stuff. And a couple of days ago, and everybody, so there was quite two very distinct schools of thought, right? There were people who were very upset that DJ Zinsler was so visibly hurt and upset that this has happened to AKA. And their reasoning is that she's married to somebody else. How dare she have such like emotions for an ex-boyfriend? I kid you not. What? How dare she have such visible emotions for an ex-boyfriend? And then there were people who were like, of course she, you know, she has a relationship with this person, but also her child is in it. And as she's being a good mother, being part of this experience and helping her child through this trauma. It has been ongoing. The number of people feeling sorry for, I think her husband's name is Bongs or Debongs or something, right? And a couple of days ago, I saw a screenshot, speaking of photoshopped, which looked like DJ Zinsler's stories or something, but it was also quite a disparaging little note about her husband and Keith and AKA being dead and being left with this guy now. And when I saw that, I was like, yeah, this has got to be fake news. But it's created such outrage. And I kind of let it go. But yesterday.
But what is up
what
with
are
people
doing?
inserting themselves into the story. Like you suddenly, you know, your feelings on this matter. Like you've got a problem with DJ Zinsler's feelings about X, Y, and Z. But you are about 3 or 4 degrees removed from that. And you want us to take you seriously. No self-awareness, none, zero.
No self-awareness and such vitriol, such vitriol. And I really, and I get it. There are lots and as we are evolving in our new way of being and living, our traditions and cultures, all people, black people, white people, are changing and evolving to accommodate the world that we live in now, right? So this is the ex-girlfriend. They have got a child together. It requires a different way for all the families to behave, to work together when such a thing happens. It doesn't have to be tragic death like AKA's, but any kind of, you know, just a passing on or a changing of circumstances. Which, and you know, obviously, because it's happening in South Africa, we're thinking a lot about it. But you know what's happening with Bruce Willis, right?
Well, before we move on to Bruce Willis, because I've heard this story, it's also sad. And you know, it could happen to anyone, frankly. These are the famous people that we're talking about. But just on the AKA thing, I've also, it's, I don't think it's so much cultural. I mean, those changes are happening and people are coping with them or they're not coping with them. But I also think there's a level of emotional immaturity about so much of this that really drives me crazy. It's like you've got a bunch of people who are just essentially very, very childish. They've got childish emotions. They're in adult bodies. They've got X number of years on the clock already, but they kind of behave and react and are emotional to a degree that no sensible adult should be. This is acceptable behavior for a 5-year-old or a 7-year-old, but the wailing, the screaming, the emotional acting out, it seems to me like this is the kind of behavior, and it needs to be called out because we've prioritized emotion. You know, there's this brilliant book called Emotivism, which I read,
wow,
I don't know, 2-3 years ago. You got to read about this because it's all about how essentially the world has become performative. And for some people, it no longer matters what the content of what you're saying is. It's all about the delivery. In other words, if you are crying, and I saw Katy Perry, this is the weirdest thing, right? I never watch reality TV. Someone sent me a clip of Katy Perry on American Idol. And there's this guy who comes up and he is a survivor of a school shooting or something. And he's there to sing a song. So he arrives on the screen and, you know, he starts telling his story. And now, of course, American Idol's just become this long whinge fest about how sad everyone's lives are. I mean, if you watched American Idol, you'd think that humanity was just beset with misery on every level. Because everyone has a sob story and, oh, I was born with just half a leg and, oh, my gran used to, I don't know, eat my intestines when I was 3 and, oh, I grew up and only half a biscuit was given to me at tea time. You know, it's like these pathetic stories. Everyone has to milk all that shit. So Katy Perry starts listening to this guy's story and she has like a meltdown. She basically starts wailing and saying, oh, this country's so fucked. We're so, everything's so terrible. I can't believe we have to live in a country where someone could go to a school and someone else could pull out a gun. But she's at high pitch. She's out of control.
On American Idol.
Or on the show. And I'm thinking, bitch, calm down. You have $400 million in the bank. America's treating you just fine. America's not so.
You're going to be okay.
Katy Perry, if you can live the kind of life you do where you get paid to pitch up on a TV show, and I know how that TV show works because I was on it too. You could get paid. She's worth, what, $300-400 million. She releases a couple of songs every now and then, aren't even written by her. She basically pitches up and gets paid. It is the easiest life anyone in human history has ever lived. And she's going to tell me that I must believe her histrionics on television when she's got this amazing life. And only in America in the year 2023 could someone like Katy Perry, who's of very low intelligence, possibly make the kind of money and have the kind of life that she does. And she's acting out because she knows that gets the reaction. And there are people dumb enough who are also emotionally immature in the audience who are going to go, oh, what a great person Katy Perry is. She cares so much. Meanwhile,
and it blunts us.
I can bet my bottom dollar Katy Perry has never donated a single cent of all of her millions to a school shooting victim. I can bet you she's never gone to visit one of the schools where there was a shooting. I can bet you she doesn't even know what these towns look like. She goes where she can make money, and she behaves like this on TV because people think she cares. Now, I would rather have an emotionally cold person say, hey, really sorry to hear about your school shooting. Now sing, because this is a singing show. But, but Katy Perry knows she gets paid. She gets paid for the emotivism. She gets paid.
That's what they ask of her. But then it blunts us. I think it blunts us.
It drives me up the wall. Now, with this AKA thing, there were a whole bunch of people who never met AKA. Sure, they were fans of his music. Wailing and carrying on. Like, they had never encountered him in their lives except through his music. And I understand music can make me emotional. I've cried about people who've died who are musicians that I've never met. But to do this performatively, in other words, not because you're feeling something truly, but because you want other people to see you performing something, is just outrageously cheap. And it makes me think that you just are not a serious person. Anyway.
No, it's true, because it also blunts us. It makes us blunt to real emotion. So this hyper performance of all emotion.
I mean, the fact that some idiot on Twitter is commenting on DJ Zintler and saying like she's pretending to care about AKA because she's married, she should have moved on. The cheek of this. You're not even in this situation, you third rate 15 follower nobody in some shitty part of South Africa that no one's heard of. How dare you insert yourself into this because you want to be important? I mean, that's all it is. It's like, me too. Notice me, me also. It's like Katy Perry having a tantrum about school shootings. It's like, me too. I'm also in the story. Notice me.
I'm also important. I've got
lots of cameras on me all the time, and I got plenty of money in the bank, and I've got a celebrity lifestyle that is unparalleled in all of human history in terms of the attention and the love I get every day. But still, please notice me. I need to be important too. Me, Katy Perry, me. Unbelievable.
It's hectic. It's hectic. And wanting to dictate how people should respond and react. What the right thing is. Well,
I think there's also, we've got to take the blame. When I say we, people in the media, all of us in society, frankly, because we've responded to this emotionalism, this emotivism rather. It's a word, look it up, emotivism. And the book was, I remember it's been a while since I read it, but the book essentially said, we've put such an emphasis on this stuff that we no longer investigate the content of someone's point of view, opinion, thoughts, feelings even, because now it's all about how they perform. So, you know, they have a tantrum, they scream, they wail, they react emotionally. And we're meant to give that as much credit as we would their cogent thoughts, which are either written down or thought through or spoken in full sentences. We don't do that anymore. Now it's all like just hysteria here, hysteria there. You get a car, you get a car, you get a car, and everyone's screaming the whole time. And so what's happened? We've just become like, oh, well, I don't care anymore. I don't care about any of this stuff. And you could see it in the kid.
Jeez, Gareth, I've just like Googled emotivism because I was going to try and find the book so that I can look it up later. And I've never even heard this word, and there are 221,000 results in like 0.03 seconds. And none of them are a book. There's like so much happening here.
I'll find the book for you. But
now I'm going to be in a hole. Now I'm going to be in a hole, in a like Google hole all day trying to figure this out. Thank you very much, Gareth.
It'll be worth it for me, because I think this thing is at the center of why so much is getting confused. Why so many important things are being left by the wayside. And I honestly think that this is part of it, is that we don't, our emphasis is on this, on emotivism rather than on content, on actual substance. So here's the actual definition. In philosophy, it's a term which is an ethical theory which regards ethical and value judgments as expressions of feeling or attitude and prescriptions of action rather than assertions or reports of anything. So
this is exactly it, right? It's about the prescription of the action. It's about everybody's prescribing how they think DJ Zintler should be responding to this thing, or how her husband should be responding, or how his family, like AKA's family, it's also prescriptive. And this is the thing that I'm so fascinated to watch and contrast with, because I'd forgotten this until a couple of days ago. When we first saw Demi Moore, Ashton Kutcher, and Bruce Willis on holiday with the kids, and how it was so mind-blowing. And that, you know, and they have Demi and Bruce and Bruce's current wife, and their kids are all grown up now. How they have all got a family unit or tribe or whatever you want to call it that sure. works for all of them. And, you know, and everybody around it and hence, and they were able to break out of this prescribed way of being.
Correct.
In such a magnificent way. And now that, and I saw it again because Bruce Willis is not well and has a.
What are you diagnosed with? Is it Alzheimer's or dementia?
Frontotemporal. Yeah. So it's frontotemporal, blah, 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 dementia.
Right.
And it's.
Same thing, Joe Biden.
I mean, he's only 67. He's only 67. And so it's quite a devastating thing. And because that's horrible. Very young. And the diagnosis, it affects his speech. It affects, you know, cause of the frontal temporal lobe that it has affected. But to mm-hmm. watch all, and the statement they put out yesterday is actually signed at the bottom, Ladies of Willis Moore.
Oh, wow.
It's like, right, right.
Yeah. But I know, again, what is wrong with, do people have a problem with Bruce being surrounded by his ex-wife, his children, his new wife in a moment where he probably needs a lot of support? I think this is beautiful. I think it's also very big of Ashton Kutcher. I think it's big of Demi Moore that they're able to show each other love. You know, when your ex is someone who you just hate and you just cannot get along with, they might be a terrible person. That's entirely possible. But it's also possible that you aren't mature enough to have them in the right place for the right reasons. And sometimes that doesn't work out. I understand. Like sometimes people's personalities just don't allow for an adult, mature way out of things. But in this case, I love the story because to me, you know, we talk about modern families. We talk about modern families. Imagine you're him. You're Bruce Willis. And now you've just been diagnosed with this dementia, which means it's going to be an arduous road to the end, but the end is inevitable. And like, you're not going to remember where you are by the time that happens. I mean, it's very sad for the man who gave us so many great movies, for the guy I watched his roast, years ago when they broadcast that. And I remember Demi Moore coming up and she made some devastatingly funny jokes about Bruce at the roast. And it was very, very cool. Because he sat there laughing and I thought, well, this is healthy. There are not a lot of people who go through that. And there was genuine love, despite the fact that she's moved on. She's with Ashton Kutcher. The kids are all grown.
I again only found this out like yesterday that she's not with Ashton Kutcher anymore. And that when they broke up and got divorced, like in 2015 or something like that, Bruce Willis was the person that kind of helped Demi put the pieces back together. I know, right? But
beautiful story.
You know, you talk about the emotional maturity of all of the individuals involved and how it's worked for everyone.
Of course. I mean, like, this is how I wasn't paying attention. Ashton is married to Mila
Kunis. I don't know who that is.
She's also an actress. I don't think he cares anymore. He's got his own Brady Bunch. Agree, G. Hate the bullshit drama, people. Make it when it comes to shared parenting. Okay, so yeah. I mean, the point is still that they're all obviously mature enough for them to be around each other and not make it all about me, you know? It's this me thing that so many people are constantly absorbed by. And you could see it. It's like if Pumi tells me a story and she's like, oh, you know, something terrible happened to me this week. I was hit by an Uber Eats driver. And the first thing I do is I go, oh, I was also hit by an Uber Eats driver last week, Thursday. You're like, oh, God. You know, take a minute to listen to the person who's talking to you. To actually just give them a chance to say their say. And then if you're going to say anything, talk about their experience. Ask them a question, make it about them before you immediately reflexively turn it into a me discussion. But that's what people do. People can't help themselves. A friend of mine lost a close family member the other day. And they said when they told someone about this, when they told almost everybody about this, the first thing those other people do goes, oh, well, I lost X, Y, and Z. I also lost somebody. Yeah, when you do that, you're not helping that person, right? It's you're turning it into your story. And I'm afraid there are so many people who, in the world at the moment, they can't help but make it about them every step of the way. And it's just so damn boring, where it becomes competing stories for the same amount of emotivism.
And emotional attention.
Listen, if there's anything that keeps me single, it's this shit. I hear people talking like this. Pummy.
What?
I hear people talking like this. It just puts me off them immediately. When you have a conversation with somebody and they immediately make it about them. And I can tell you, 90% of people do that. Maybe even more. I don't have the statistics. You can make them up on the spot. But I would say 1 in 10 people is able to actually listen and not make it about them. Mm-hmm. One. Sure. It's rare.
Okay, so that's the thing to practice today. That's the thing to practice today. It's just a little bit of real listening. Just hear what's being said and not necessarily listen to respond.
Right.
Or to give your experience or your perspective, but just to listen.
Well, Congo Chris says, not surprising. We live in a society of neurotic, narcissistic adult children. And I don't actually disagree.
True story.
Hmm?
But it is. It's the cameras out all the time. It's the performance. You know, you see it. You see it on TikTok and all of those things. Everybody is always setting up the camera to perform for the likes.
Oh, not only that, but they set up the camera. They switch on their camera and record other people's misery. I mean, like you see these people being beaten up or whatever. You know, you'll see there was this hideous movie the other day of this kid beating up a teacher. Now, instead of the person who's filming it getting involved and trying to help the victim, they want to film it because there's a perverse incentive structure. So now what the real value is for you is to not get involved and do the right thing, which all of us agree in a clear, lucid moment. The appropriate activity, especially if you're a man and you see a woman in duress or in stress or in danger, the correct thing to do as a man is to go in and help. And if you catch a couple of punches or whatever, that's what you're meant to do as a good man.
Or call security.
Instead of using this to call security, what are these people doing? They're filming it.
I did not see the video of the kid beating up the teacher, but I read about him for something. He took away his some kind of video game device during class. Yeah. But there is a video yesterday or the day before of a guy just shooting a homeless person in the street. And there is a person watching. It's not a quick action fight sequence, whatever. This homeless person is just sitting there on the side of the pavement. The other one takes the time, takes out his gun, gets it all ready, and just, I'm like, this person is just shooting. He's not even saying to other people in the restaurant he's in or whatever. Or just shouting at the guy. Like, everybody just wants to record. The next trending video. They want to record the next trending video.
Perverse incentives. So I think what we need to do as a society is we need to start charging people who are filming this stuff with being accessories to a crime. You're not.
Are they not, though?
Well, they are. To my mind, they are, because they're the ones who are putting it out. And listen, this stuff makes the rest of society neurotic as well. I don't want to see people being shot. I don't want to see people being beaten up. I know it happens, right? I know that this is something that happens. But the fact that these are the kinds of videos that we're now, that gather views, that gather likes, that these are the kinds of things that people are forced to watch whenever they're scrolling. There should be a cost for this. You want to stop? I mean, I saw the most brilliant thing yesterday, which we can maybe talk about in the Burning Platform. And you and I have been talking about it a lot. It feels like 5 minutes, but we've been going for like half the show already.
We've missed headlines, Gareth.
I know. We'll get to it. We've got lots to do in the Burning Platform. And Mighty Jamie's coming in. We've got another guest coming. It's going to be a good show. Anyway, I saw this brilliant clip yesterday, which I retweeted or re-Instagrammed or whatever it is. Warren Buffett saying, if we wanted to reduce inflation, it would be very easy. He says the moment the inflation rate goes above 3%, that invalidates the ability of a congressperson to run again. He said they'll immediately make a law. I mean, can you imagine they make a law that if it goes over 3%, you cannot run for office again? Those politicians will be tap dancing like cats on a hot tin roof. And I thought, what a brilliant idea. Now, we need to have a mechanism by which we change this perverse incentive where people will film someone being abused, where people will react emotively on social media, where we actually take away some kind of sting from their ability to generate attention for themselves. I'm not saying we need a social credit score like in China. I think that's also twisted. But I do think that there needs to be a cost. It's like people can go in and say, you know what, you're overreacting or you're not involved or whatever. And that person's clout drops. Because I do think we live in a society where a bunch of people who are clout chasing and they're doing themselves and society no good. There's got to be a way we can at least we've got to be able to.
We need a sin bin for it, right? We need a sin bin for it. I know, yeah. We can all block. Like I've blocked, what's his name? The guy with all of the crime news on Twitter.
Yusuf?
Yeah, Yusuf Abramji. He still bleeds through, but I have blocked Yusuf and all of, because for some reason there was a time when I just saw all his, like, he's always putting out videos of some kind of CCTV camera of a hijacking, of a shooting, of a this, of that. Like, yeah. I know we can do that, but wouldn't it be amazing if there was like a sin bin, like, button next to the like button? Shall I tweet Elon Musk?
I think so. Let him know. This is what we need. All right.
That would be cool.
I mean, believe it or not, we've spent the entire hour talking about this because we care about it so much. But it seems that a lot of people in the comments agree. I mean, you know, there's this comment from Chris who says, they don't even record other people's misery. They will set up a camera and film themselves crying on the post on social media. It's not just neurotic. It's deeply narcissistic, mm-hmm. which I agree on. And there was this brilliant video I saw this week, which is also kind of in this line. There's this woman in Britain and she's filming herself. She's a fitness influencer. So she's filming herself in the park doing a like fitness update or whatever.
I saw that.
a little camera on a tripod. And she's set up and there's this bench in the background and this other dude comes and sits on the bench and she goes, excuse me, could you move that bench over there? And he goes, no. She goes, but I'm a fitness influencer and I'm making a video. He goes, so?
No, my favorite is when she said my followers, and he said, oh, you've got followers, do you? Are you Jesus or something?
Exactly. And I just suddenly thought her whole world
grumpy old men.
But I loved it because this grumpy old man, he gave her perspective because her whole world is this world of followers and making videos. And, you know, she's like a typical Gen Z kid and he doesn't give a shit. He's not interested in her at all. And she says, oh, but it's very unfair. I've set up my camera. And he goes,
I was here first.
I sit here every day. Go and find yourself another Ben.
When she said they don't want to see an old man, he was like, huh? I'm an old man now, am I? Yeah. Guys, look for it. It will make your day. If you haven't seen it, look for it. It will make your day. That grumpy old man. Oh, the world needs more grumpy old people. Just to give you perspective. Just to beat you back with perspective.
So everybody's homework today is going to look up emotivism. And I'll find the title of that book as well for you. In fact, hang on, Pums. I might even have, because I made a note of it on my, you know, I keep lists of everything, right?
I don't. I've seen the notebooks with your very, very neat handwriting.
Yep. Motivism. It's by McIntyre. Let me just find this. Alistair McIntyre.
Alistair McIntyre.
A-L-A. S-D-A-I-R, Alistair MacIntyre, MacIntyre.
What? MacIntyre. What M-A-C- kind of a Macker are you?
MacIntyre. So go and look that up. That's the book. He's actually at Notre Dame University.
Alasdair. And it says you're a philosopher.
Yeah,
I like political. He also looks like a grumpy old man.
He does.
And Scottish, I think he's American. He must be there grumpy.
Got to be so grumpy, right? Presbyterian. Can you imagine?
Jesus is 94 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Gareth, I had such an amazing conversation 2 days ago with a lady who's now deceased, whose now deceased husband, started the Financial Mail here in South Africa.
Yes.
Oh, but she is effervescent. She is 79 years old, and we had like afternoon drinks. There were four of us. And in the next table, she was staying at a quite a boutique little hotel here in Rosebank. And at the next table, there was another lady who was obviously also staying at the hotel, having her afternoon glass of wine. And she came and started out on her phone, but she was so engrossed in the conversation. And I mean, her name's Hazel, holding court with us. She made us laugh and laugh and laugh. This lady on the other side, if I were her, I would have come across and joined our table, because I would have just been like, listen, she was so engrossed in our conversation. When we left and said to her, we're sorry if we were like disturbing and made a lot of noise, she was like, listen, I loved your conversation. It was dazzling. I'm going to introduce you to Hazel. You might have to interview her. She's got fantastic stories. What a life she's lived.
Sounds amazing. I'd love to meet her.
What a life she's lived. A life that spans South Africa, London, LA. In the heady days of it all, when it was all starting out and all happening, you know, you talk about history all the time. And when you read it, it feels like history was very long ago and very far away. But her husband was an RAF pilot in World War II, because that was the age. He was a little bit older than her, obviously. But, I mean, imagine that, having had that life experience.
She sounds bloody brilliant, and we must get her on the show.
You must get her on the show. She'll be amazing.
We're at just after 7 o'clock. So when we come back, we got the burning platform. Yeah, stick around. Pumi and I are very ill-disciplined this morning. We've been talking, and we're late now.
We're going to start with the headlines.
When we come back, it's the burning platform. Mighty Jamie joins us, and we've got a special guest as well. Someone who I think you're going to enjoy hearing from, Professor Thabo Legwala, who is an acting tax ombud. And we're going to find out about the rights of a taxpayer, which I think are things that we all care about. So we're going to get into that just now. CliffCentral.com.